Okay, so we will today look a little bit at the third and fourth aliyahs of Parshas Kisavo. And there is a unified theme in these two aliyahs, and especially we should take note of the fact that today, of course, is September 11th. So it's a day in which we recognize the terrible loss of life that happened 13 years ago today. Terrible destruction that reminds us that we live in a world, and it's certainly as true today as it was then, if not more so, where there is terrible evil being perpetrated in the name of religion. And our response is, among many things, the reinforcement of our own religious values and the proud statement of what our own value is, what our own Torah has to teach, and our own covenant with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really the theme of these two aliyahs. These two aliyahs, Shlishi and Revi of Kisavo. So the parsha begins in Shlishi. Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha la'asos es ha'chukim ho'eile v'yas ha'mishpatim v'shamarta v'yasiso osam b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. So first of all, Rashi comments, Hayom hazeh, Rashi says, that this day, Kol Yom Yu Benechach Chadashim, which is a theme that we'll come back to, that essentially we're being reminded that our relationship with the Torah should be such that it's something that we see anew every day, and that even though we feel like we've heard this before, we're chazrin, we know this material already, but both in terms of excitement and in terms of education, that we recognize that there are levels upon levels that we didn't fully appreciate the first time around. And both our enthusiasm and our attention should reflect the fact that the Torah is given to us anew every day when we learn. Every day it's a completely fresh experience, and it's an exciting experience. And that's crucial for us to have the proper relationship with the Torah. So concerning the relationship, so the next two psukim have an unusual word form, which appears in both the next two psukim. Pasuk Yizayin tells us, Es Hashem hamarta hayom lios lecha le'elohim v'alecha es bidrachav v'lishmora chukav v'mitzvosav v'mishpatav v'lishmoa v'kolav. So first of all, just to take note, v'alecha es bidrachav. So that theme, the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer Abbas Chesed, he takes note of the fact that the theme of v'halachta bidrachav appears in the Sefer Dvarim at least 8 times. He mentions that it appears 8 times in the Torah. They all happen to be in Sefer Dvarim. And that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the mandate, which is known in Latin as the Mitatio Dei, that our job in this world is to walk in His path and to imitate Him. So that's obviously challenging. We don't have the same skill set. But the Gemara tells us that this really primarily refers to Chesed. That just as God acts with chesed and compassion, in one place the Gemara talks about having the attributes of chesed, in another place the Gemara talks about acts of chesed, specifically that God does for us, that God does for humanity. So when we're told to imitate Him, v'alachta b'drachav, so that is largely directed at chesed, but there's more to it as well. Rav Shechter has a kuntris in the first Rav Sefer Nefesh HaRav, where he talks about how Rav Soloveitchik developed this theme in many other ways as well, that any time the Torah and the Gemara tells us about some attribute, some behavior of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's often there for a halachic purpose. It's often there to tell us how to be, what to do, because we have this theme of halachta bidracha. But what's more unique then, because that's a recurring theme in Sefer Dvarim, but the recurring theme between these two psukim is this word hamarta. Es Hashem hamarta hayom. So we find that in the next pasuk also, v'Hashem hamircha hayom lios lo la'am segula kasher diber lach v'lishmor kol mitzvosav. So Hashem hamarta v'Hashem hamircha. So what exactly does that word mean? So it's not really clear. If you had a chance to look at the parasha, look at Rashi, so you see that there is some ambiguity about what is this word hamircha hamarta. What exactly does the word mean? So Rashi suggests maybe it's a lashon of hafrasha, of dala, that it's saying God has set you aside, you are distinct, you are distinguished, God has made you distinct, and therefore the reciprocal language, He has made us distinct, and we have therefore somehow made Him distinct as well. Right? That's what the Gemara says, that Kodesh Baruch Hu wears tefillin. That the tefillin that parallels our tefillin, our tefillin says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and God's tefillin says, Mika Amcha Yisrael Ba'echad Ba'aretz. And the Gemara says about the Jews, Atem Asisuni Chativa Achas Ba'olam, that you made me into a distinct, separated concept. And that we have this reciprocal relationship, and perhaps that's what the word means. It has something to do with distinction. Rashi also suggests that maybe it has to do with glory. It's a lashon of tiferes. You find that in other Rishonim as well, that this is, you have glorified me, therefore I glorify you. The Gemara, Maseches Gittin, understands the language to mean, this is Gittin and Daftan Zayin in the Beis, really the word hamircha sounds like, if you want to translate it grammatically, it sounds like it comes from the word amar, to say, but hamircha means that he has made you say something. So therefore, the Gemara says that it refers to a shvua, that he made us take a shvua and we made him take a shvua, so to speak, that he made us promise that we're not going to trade him in for any other gods, and therefore he made us promise that we're not going to... He made us promise that we're not going to trade him in for any other gods, and he promises to us that he's not going to trade us for any other nation. So, more grammatically focused, hamircha means to make somebody say something. Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch, in his commentary on this pasuk, so he understands it the same way as far as hamircha, that it's about a causative verb, you make somebody say something, and that the idea is that this refers to the public relationship that the Jews have with God, that there is this connection between God and the Jews, that's what this whole theme and section is about, and it is such that it's not private, it's public, the whole world knows about it, and we know that's true, right? Even casual references to Jews in the world today, the Jews are called the chosen people by others, by non-Jews, this is a nature of the relationship that is perceived, that is spoken about, so that could be the literal meaning of this pasuk, that God says, I have chosen you, and I have chosen you in such a way that the world talks about it, and you have chosen me in such a way that the world talks about it. Maybe that's what hamircha, hamartha means. There is a more Hasidic interpretation, but it's very interesting. The Paris Yosef quotes from Likute Maran, Nachman of Breslov, that he has a Hasidic idea, that's a very nice idea, that when somebody is misvadeh in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when somebody confesses in front of God, when somebody prays in front of God, he pours his heart out and he reveals his true self, so God's response to him is parallel, correlates to the degree of revelation of the individual. It's tailored to his particular expression. So therefore, God saying, you have spoken out to me, I have spoken out to you, to the degree that you have spoken, I have spoken back to you. It's interesting just to parallel, because this gives a little dafyomi synergy. So in the Gemara towards the end of Maseches Mo'ed, it was dafyomi a few days ago. So in terms of this nechama that he's referring to, so when human beings are involved in nichum avelim, so the Gemara says that, this is a little known halacha, but it's a real halacha, and the Gemara is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if somebody's paying a shiva call, so he should let the avel speak first. The Gemara says, "Ein ha'avelim, ein ha'menachemim, rishayim l'daver ad sh'yiftach avel t'chila." That the people who come to visit, they can't speak until the avel speaks first. So it's not 100% clear what the purpose of this din is. Why do you have such? Most people don't even know the din exists. You don't have people so careful about this, but it's a real din. So it's interesting to consider why it is. Especially in light of the fact that there's a Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Brachos, the Gemara says that there are certain ways of figuring out how much reward you get for certain mitzvos. So the Gemara has a whole list of different activities, positive activities you can do, that the schar is calibrated based on how enthusiastic you are, how committed you are, how hard you work, whatever it is, different things. So the Gemara says that for a Beis Avel, when you go to a Beis Avel, agra de beitamia shtika, the reward for going to a Beis Avel is based on the silence. So it's a hard idea to understand, because how is silence correlated to a successful Shiva visit? In fact, it's probably the opposite. It seems that when you have a chi of nicham aveilim, you have to actually say something. It's not enough just to be there. You have to really try to be menachem. So there are couple of interpretations as to what this means, especially, it's funny because the Gemara says, Beitamia, uses that word for a Beis Avel. So Rashi in Maseches Sanhedrin says Beit Tami is a word for Beis Avel. Shemati'im enoso bedvarim, because when you go to make a shiva call, so you speak to the person the words of meaning, words of explanation that make it easier for him. So it's funny to say the reward for the experience is correlated to the shtika, when the whole point is you're not shosek, you're not quiet, you go there and you say things. So perhaps you could say as follows, that the idea is that yes, you're supposed to talk at a shiva house, but you can't just come in with your prepackaged speech and just give that to everyone and assume that'll do it. You have to have a sense of where the mindset is of the Avo. What is their mentality right now? Where are they holding? People need different kinds of comments. People need different kinds of remarks. So if you want to have a successful shiva visit, if you want to accomplish something, you can't start speaking first. You have to let the Avo speak first. You have to let the Avo say something so that you can know how to tailor your own remarks. So therefore, maybe the Gemara means that Ein Ha that you have to wait to listen to the Avil first, and then that will indicate how successful you are in the Nichum, and therefore the Gemara says Agra de Beitamia Shtika. So here also may begin the sense of Halach de Bedrachav. So that's the idea that Rav Nachman is saying, that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu works also, that his relationship with you is going to correlate, it's going to parallel to how you open up to him, how you are misvada, how you are mispalel, how you go through the process of revealing yourself to God. He responds to you in that sense. And therefore, to that degree, maybe that's also what this parallel, hamarta, hamirta, that you have spoken, God has spoken back to you. That's the nature of this relationship. Are you interested?
Maybe even more synergy with Achyomi. I think it was yesterday or something that God says, I have made you a chativa achas in the world, and you have made me a chativa achas. Like in the proof pasuk is Shema Yisrael, is God one in the world, unique. And the pasuk that we're unique is Mikam Klal Yisrael.
Exactly. Right. Same idea. Right. So that all reflects this reciprocal relationship that's about somehow contained in these words. So it's a whole range of interpretations of what these words mean, but they all address different aspects of this reciprocal relationship between God and the Jewish people. The Oznayim L'Torah, Reb Zalman Sarutskin, comments that this pasuk coming over here, where it is what the message is being conveyed, that sometimes, like we saw a lot in last week's parsha, so you have an environment, and then mitzvos are brought into that environment. So you have a house, you build a mezuzah. You have a garment, you put on tzitzit, etc., etc. Here, God is saying, okay, now first, I need you to be mekabel, that you're my nation. That's now the introductory statement. In the sense of hakol b'dei shamayim, chutz me'ira shamayim, that whatever else is going to happen, it happens only in the context of your being recognized as a mitzvah. And in that sense, he also notes that, so this relationship has its first, God says, okay, you have declared me to be your God, now I am declaring you to be my nation. So what does that accomplish? So it accomplishes in the sense of gadol ha-mitzvah v'yoseh, and we know that the Gemara says that even though we might have thought that if one person has to do something and somebody else does it voluntarily, that the person who does it voluntarily is even better, is even more praiseworthy because he didn't have to do it. But we know the halacha takes a different approach. It says, no, that gadol ha-mitzvah v'yoseh, that it's even more meaningful when somebody does what he is obligated to do than doing it voluntarily. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, so you have picked me as your God, and now I am being mitzvah. So now the same action that you're going to do, I am now creating a tzivoy. It's in the sense of, the notion that God creates chus by providing us opportunities to do what we would have done anyway. So here, okay, so now you're saying this is your acceptance, that God says, okay, it's a mitzvah. Now this is something you're also going to be credited for. So mitzvos is very much the topic now of this next aliyah, Revi. So the part should be the Revi, the aliyah begins. Vayitzav Moshe v'ziknei Yisrael esha'am le'mor shamor es kol ha'mitzvah asher anochi mitzav ve'eschem hayom. Keep all the mitzvos. And the pasuk continues, v'hoya b'yom asher tavru es hayarden el ha'aretz asher Hashem elokecha nosei lach v'akimosu l'cha avonim gedolos v'sadeta osam v'sid. So you, when the day comes that you're going to pass over the Yarden into the land, the land that God is giving you, you should set up big stones, big rocks, and you should plaster them. So there's a lot to try to figure out about what's going on. These big rocks, there's a lot of discussion. I think some of you had a chance to look at the Gemara in Masechet Sota, which talks about some of the details of this. There's a lot of ambiguity of what exactly was going on with the rocks. So first of all, what are the rocks for? The rocks are also referred to in Sefer Yehoshua, in Perek Dalet and Perek Ches of Sefer Yehoshua. So there's a reference as well to rocks. It seems like there are three rocks. It could be that there are three sets of rocks. It could be that some of them overlap, some of them are actually the same. But it's not 100% clear. But in Yehoshua, so the pasuk says over there, "Vahodatim espenechem lemor b'yabasha avir Yisrael sayardim hazad." It's there to advertise how the Jews crossed the Yarden on dry land. And the other two and third, second and third rock that we see here, so here as the Netziv explains, so you need one for the Jews and one for the Umas HaOlam, one for the nations of the world. They also get a rock. They also get a set of rocks. They also get apparently the Torah written on the rock. So what's the purpose of that? So again, Rav Zalman Sarutsky in the Oznayim LaTorah, so he comments that he thinks that maybe this is similar. Question about that?
What is the you said,
right, so then the third is what's mentioned in Yehoshua, that's the announcement about crossing over the Yarden. Now again, it's not necessarily that they're all separate. That's also a little bit ambiguous, but there's three references to rocks. So this idea of being for the Umas HaOlam, so he suggests from Zalman Sarutsky that maybe the idea is very similar to Rashi, the first Rashi in the Chumash, which I just had an opportunity to speak about this at an event last night. I think it's an important Rashi, but it's interesting how the point that I made last night doesn't carry over to here. So maybe it does. You have to figure out exactly how. That Rashi famously comments at the beginning of the Torah that why is it that the Torah begins with Bereishis? How is that Nogeya LaHalacha if the Torah is a book of laws? So why do we start off with creation of the world? What does that have to do with Halacha L'maisa? So Rashi comments that this is a message to the world, that this is a proof that when the day will come, Rashi's writing this 1,000 years ago, and we know he could have been writing it yesterday, that when the day will come, that the Umas HaOlam will say to the Jews, listen, Matan, that you're robbers, that you stole the land, you don't belong here, get out of the land of Israel, it's not your place. So the Torah starts off with Bereishis to make the point that God created the world, He made everything, He has the right to say who lives where, and nobody stole anything. This belongs to the Jews. So it could be that that's the message here as well, that anyone who's going to come into the land of Israel, they'll see this declaration of the Torah, they'll see that the message is God created the world, God has dictated that this is the Jewish homeland, and that's the message to the world. But the difference between Rashi and Bereishis and here, that I was referring to in terms of what I was talking about last night, is that you could ask the question that if that's what Rashi says in the beginning of the Torah, so okay, so then we've solved the problem of peace in the Middle East, right? No more war. All you have to do is open up your Chumash, show everyone the Rashi, go to the United Nations and show them that it's a Beferish Rashi and Chumash, that God gave us the land. So what's the problem? We don't have a translation? We have art scroll. We can translate the Rashi. What's the big deal? So we recognize that that's probably not going to win anybody over, that just because there's a Rashi in Chumash that says that God created the world and therefore He can give us the land, that's not going to carry too much weight in the United Nations. So what's the point then? So the point seems to be, as some of the Bala Moser explained, I think it's a crucial point, that even if the rest of the world doesn't chop, it doesn't acknowledge it, we have to know for ourselves that we live a moral life, that we are working off a moral system, and that we are not stealing the land. If the rest of the world doesn't acknowledge it, that's very unfortunate, it really is. But our first priority is that we should know it for ourselves. So in this case, it's not really, if you're applying that Rashi here, it's not really the same point, because here, it davka is, if we're saying there should be a set of rocks for the Umas HaOlam, we're saying it's not about us, we're saying this is a about advertising it to the world. Except that maybe that's really the flow. At first we have Rashi and Chumash, first we have to, not the Rashi, but the Pasuk, first we have to know for ourselves that that's what it's all about. And then when we work within that framework, so then we can project that message to the rest of the world, and that's our hope, that it ultimately will be conveyed to the whole rest of the world. So that's really a question. The truth is, do these rocks have the message of Bereishis on it? So it's not really clear from the Pesukim, what does the Pasuk actually say? That you should write, the next Pasuk says, V'chasav toleihen eskol divrei ha-Torah hazos bo'avrecha, L'man asher tavo el ha'aretz asher Adonai Elohecha nosem lecha eretz zavas chalav u'dvash kasher diber Adonai Elohei avosecha lach. So you should write the words of the Torah. So what does that mean? The whole Torah? Should write out the whole Chumash? Even though the Chumash wasn't finished yet at that point, when the words weren't presented yet at that point. So it means the whole Torah? So this was a big debate. There are a lot of different comments in the Mefarshim and later as to what exactly was written on the rocks. Some say that it was all of the mitzvos. Tayyid mitzvos are written. Others say that it was the whole Torah. The Ramban writes like that, that it was the whole Torah mamish. The whole Torah from beginning to end was what was written there. And that's Ma'is HaNisim. It was a miracle they could get the whole Torah in. This was before the micro paintings and before the, all the fancy thing we do nowadays. That there was Ma'is HaNisim. They were able to get the whole Torah onto the rocks. The Torah Tamima writes that he doesn't think it could be the whole Torah. He thinks maybe it's just the Aseret HaDibros. We now have a minig in many shuls to have big rocks with the Aseret HaDibros written on it at the front of the shul. So Paris Yosef HaChadash writes that he thinks maybe that's also what Rav Sajagon means. Rav Sajagon says that it's just the mitzvos. But if you're worried about space, so the mitzvos also take up a lot of space. 613 mitzvos also take up a lot of space, even if it's less space than the whole Torah. So he thought that maybe Rav Sajagon was really saying that it's the Aseret HaDibros working off his own shita, that the Aseret HaDibros are a summary of all the mitzvos, that you could trace all the 613 mitzvos to the 10 principles of the Aseret HaDibros. The Ramban happens to believe that also. The Ramban has a whole essay on that topic about how you can trace all the mitzvos to the Aseret HaDibros. So you could say maybe he also thought that that's really what's on the rocks, except this doesn't fit so well with his words here. His words sound like it means literally from Bereishis to the end, the entire Torah, word for word, was written on it. The Sforno understands more that it's the Parshas HaMelech that's read for Hakel. But that's the idea, that's what was written. And the Ralbag, in his commentary to Yehoshua, he writes that it's the brachos and the klolos that we just talk about in the Aliyah, so that's what's being addressed here. These brachos and klolos that Parshas Kisavo includes, so that's what should be written on the rock. And so the Rabbag also writes there that he says that if these rocks were really that big, like the size of the Mizbeach of Bayis Sheni, says it wouldn't really be a challenge to put the whole Torah on. But the Aznayim Torah notes that, okay, the Torah maybe you could fit, but 70 language translation, and the point for the Umos HaOlam, that everything should be translated into 70 language, that's too much. So that it's hard to believe you can fit that on. So if that was on, that must be a nace, it's Ma'is HaNisim. And he suggests that that's also the whole point, that if we're trying to show a message to the Umos HaOlam, so the fact that it's written in a way that a human being would not be able to pull off, especially in a pre-computer era, wasn't something we could do, so that will also show that this is clearly miraculous, that this is something that comes from God. The Torah Tamima does suggest that he doesn't think it's 100% clear that 70 is a reference to 70 languages. It says that, what is the language of the Pasuk? The Pasuk says that it should be written there, and it should be explained. So what does it mean, the Pasuk later on? Pasuk Ches says, V'chasavta al ha'avanim es kol divrei ha'torah hazos bo'er heitev. So what does bo'er heitev mean, besides being a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch? But what does it mean in this context? So you could say it means translated into 70 languages so that the whole world will be able to understand it. Or maybe it means that you should say all the pshatim. We say there's 70 languages historically, but we also say that there are shivim panim l'Torah, the 70 different ways to understand the Torah. So maybe that's what it means. Maybe it means that they should be clearly explained, all the different dimensions of the content of the Torah. Hi.
Isn't there a Gemara that says that it was written in many languages and the purpose is so that non-Jews can read it and become Gerim?
Yeah, the Gemara in Shabbos says like that, that with the time of the Torah was split up into 70 languages. So there is such a notion. So that's how most of the Mefarshim seem to be assuming here, that it's parallel to that. Here he's suggesting a different track, that maybe it has to do with explanation. If you look also back to the Pasuk Dalet here, so it says, Visadato son besid, that you should put plaster over them. So sid, as plaster, is usually spelled with a samach. So what's pshat in spelling it with a sin here? So the Yaznayim Latara mentions a possibility, it's a different kind of plaster. This is a fancy kind of plaster that can handle writing. The Alshaf writes that the spelling Shin Yud Dalet is a reference to Shakai, is a reference to one of God's names, Shin Dalet Yud, and it's meant to symbolize Tzimtzum, God contracting His presence into this world. The Yaznayim Latara again suggests that maybe it's a reference to Yad Hashem, She Yad. It's a way, again, of saying, Maisa Nisim, that there's something miraculous about this. So, Maisa, what's the significance of all that? So, is it kosher? If you write a Sefer Torah, you would spell this word wrong. If you would spell this word with a samach instead of a sin, so is it still kosher? So that was a discussion, a Sefer Shabbat Shalmi. At the end of Chelek Beis, there's a whole discussion about this. An interesting shaila, is this really a word that's qualitatively different than sid with a samach, or is it enough the same? What does the sid represent? What does the plaster represent? There's a couple of suggestions, but the Chassam Sofer thought that it was a type of shmira, type of protection. And, you know, we say that Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, a certain type of Talmud Chacham, is a bor sid she'eino ma'abe tipa. It was like a cistern that is plastered up, that he learns so effectively, and it lasts forever, he's able to hold on to it, he doesn't miss a drop, nothing falls out. So we have a mitzvah in the Torah that we should try to protect our learning, that we shouldn't forget our learning, which you might say forgetting is an involuntary action. What does it mean you shouldn't forget? So the understanding is that you have to do what you can to make sure you don't forget, that you have to keep chazering, you have to review and review, so that you can do what's in your ability to make sure you don't forget. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva when he talks about if you're ever pater from Talmud Torah, so he says, yeah, could theoretically be pater from Talmud Torah. You always have to learn a little bit every day and every night. Yisa b'yom v'layla. But in terms of content, so Rav Moshe writes, an important kula to know for all of us to be aware of, says that if you know kol Torah kula, and that you've hazarded enough that you're sure you won't forget any of it, then you can move on to other things. Because there's a mitzvah of learning the whole Torah, and there's a directive not to forget any of it, so you have to make sure you're constantly on top of everything. But if you finish that, no problem, then go on to do other things. So this is very important to know. Lach l'maisa, it comes up, I'm sure, a lot.
What about reading newspapers?
So we have time when you finish Kol Torah Kula. Not that it doesn't have other value, but in terms of the mitzvah of the Talmud Torah, and that's what he suggests. So he has it based on a Rabbeinu Yonah, that are really different than Rabbeinu Yonah. He says that if there's an iser to forget the Torah, so then it must mean that you must be mechuyev to know it in the first place. It must be mechuyev to know kol Torah kula in the first place, because forgetting can't be worse than not learning the first time. So that's different than Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that that's actually a reference to Dayanim, the Dayanim who think they know everything and they don't realize they've forgotten. So they're going to pass him wrong because they think they know more and they don't realize that they've lost track of it. So it's not necessarily the only way to see it. There's a Kal Vachomer. That's what Rav Moshe writes. It's that there is, since it's an issue to forget the Torah, so that means that you first have to learn the whole thing. That must be your obligation. And chazer it enough that you're sure you won't forget anything. So this idea, maybe it's meant to symbolize that the Torah is protected. And that's maybe what the Sid is there to represent. But there is a big halachic discussion. There's a lot to say about the Sid. And I won't have time to go through everything, but just to be aware, the post can have a lot of attention to this plaster, because first of all, so it's machlok, is what exactly is going on. They plaster and wrote on top of the plaster, or it sounds like, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, they wrote the Torah on the rocks, and then they covered it up with plaster. So that seems like it's a problem. Why is it a problem? because that could constitute mechika. In Hilchos Shabbos, that constitutes mechika, that if you write something and then you write over it. So the Gemara says in Gittin, so you can be chayiv twice, for kosev, for writing the new thing, and mochek, for erasing the thing under it. So covering up writing, halachically, could be considered erasing. So how
on
are
Shabbos.
Sorry?
On Shabbos.
On Shabbos, yes.
So why is that a problem?
So why is it a problem? Because there are other types of erasing that's also prohibited. Right? So you're not allowed to erase God's name. So if we're talking about the whole Torah, then you're going to have a problem of erasing God's name in the Torah. Some of the poskim write, some of the mafarshim write, well, then maybe this supports the opinion that it wasn't the whole Torah, that it was just the mitzvos, or it was just the asaras adibros. That's a possible approach, except that really there's an issur of erasing Torah too, even without God's name. That's one of the problems we have with the Shemos. The Shemos involves God's name or Divrei Torah, Qua Divrei Torah. So I don't know if it would really help to say one of the other positions here, but certainly if you're saying that they wrote the whole Torah out, so then isn't that a problem of Mechika? It would seem like it. It would seem like it doesn't help so much to offer one of these other suggestions. So why is this not an issue of erasing? So this is a major discussion in Poskim, because a lot of the discussions that you find about issues of Mechikas Hashem comes up all the time, is centered around this discussion. I try to figure out, Poskim analyze what exactly is going on here. So one good Mar Mokum to know that Rabbi Shlomo Warman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in the Sefer Sheiris Yosef, I guess in Chelek Dalet, has a long essay about Mechikas Hashem, where he talks about this section of the Torah, this Aliyah. Again, you didn't know all the different themes that are in this Aliyah. This Aliyah is at the center of a lot of halachic discussion because of that. And Rabbi Warman Sfarim, Rabbi Warman was a great Talmid Chacham, passed away about a year and a half ago, a little bit less. So his Sefer Sheiris Yosef is now available on HebrewBooks.org. So if you look in Chelek Dalet, in your Mechikas Hashem, as if you want to print out some good Shabbos reading, then have a shayla of erasing it, but if you want to print it out, so that's a good Mar Mokum for you to have over Shabbos. You can read Rabbi Warman's essay about this section. So the Panami Eros has a tshuva where he says that this is not called mechika, because this kind of covering, you can uncover it. When we say that covering up a letter is erasing it, that means when you're covering it up in such a way that it's no longer going to be legible, ever. So then that's real mechika. But if you're just covering it up for now, but it's going to be available underneath, then you could say that's like closing a book. Closing a book, you're not erasing everything inside, you're just closing it. But you'll open it later and it'll still be there. Hi?
Isn't the purpose of the plaster, is the plaster see-through? Or is it?
So that's also a discussion. It sounds like here he's assuming that it's not see-through. It's going to, but it could protect it until later, and then eventually it'll be opened up. So that's the point of the Eros's point. That to cover something up temporarily with something that doesn't cause the words to become permanently invisible, is not per se erasing it. Others, the Tshuvas Miltzdaka writes that here the plaster thing is not a problem. Just the Gemara says that covering it up is like erasing. It says that's by writing. So if you have something written on paper and then you put ink on top of that, so then you've completely erased what's underneath. But here, this was done through chakika. This was carved into the stone. So covering it up does not take away that carving. The carving is still underneath. It doesn't have the same impact as written words do. So therefore, just because you have an issue of mechika with writing doesn't mean that this situation is also going to constitute mechika. And that's the discussion in general about Kedushas Hashem. You know, does it come necessarily only from writing? Does it come from a printing press also? So the post can discuss, so what is printing like? Is printing like writing, or is printing a type of stamping? Is it is a printing press like Chakika in some sense? The post can have a whole discussion about that. So here, that's what the Miltzdaka assumes, that in this case, separate from whether this would be called Ksiva or not, but it wouldn't be called mechika, because engravings would still be there, even if it's covered up. But others say, here's the Daf Yomi synergy, that Rav Meir Shapiro, who founded Daf Yomi, so today's Daf was founded by Rav Meir Shapiro, and yesterday's Daf, and next week's Daf, and all the other Daf. So he says that, he points out that if you have chakika, if this rock was also used as a mizbeach, So any kind of carving on any kind of engraving into the rock apostles it for the Mizbeach. So that's a problem. The truth is, also using Barzel would be a problem, because we also have a halacha that you can't use iron on the Mizbeach. The Mefarshim talk about that also. Was this carved with the Shamir? Was this carved with the animal that was used to make the Beis HaMikdash?
Didn't Pasuk say that you shouldn't have any Barzel?
Yes, so exactly. How does that connect to here? So how exactly does that tell you what was going on? So the Malbim suggests that the Mizbeach is different than the rocks with the words on it. It's two separate things. Others don't see that that really should necessarily fit. In a sense, it does seem to work that way from the Pasuk. Otherwise, you have to figure out how did the words get there. So it's a shy little fortune to try to figure out exactly what's going on here. It's a big discussion. But also another halachic discussion that comes out of it is Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a tshuva. It's in Chelik Beis Simin Tazvav. So let's say you have a Sefer Torah and wax falls on a letter. Right? It could happen, especially back in the day when they didn't have electric light to look at things. So you're looking at the Sefer Torah with a candle. So what happens if your candle drips onto the Sefer Torah? So now you have a letter that's covered up by wax. So is it like that letter is missing? If the letter is erased from the Sefer Torah is possible. So what if it's covered up by wax? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, based from here, that he thinks it's not possible. He thinks that this is a raya, that just like we don't consider this to be erased when it's covered up with the sid, so too, being covered up with the wax would not possible a Sefer Torah. So in any event, so after you...
You have to take it off?
Presumably you should take it off. You don't want to have a Sefer Torah that has wax all over the letters. But he's asking on a more fundamental level that would it actually create a psul? Would you have to worry that if you didn't take it off and you leaned with it, that you'd have a problem? So that's what he assumes, that this is a raya, not that way. So the Pasuk also says here, V'hayav avrachem es ha-yardein takimu es ha-avonim ha-ila, Asher Anochi Mitzaves Chamayom Bahar Eval Gesadatos Ambesed. You should start it up in Har Eval. As some of the guys pointed out this morning, you know, that's not an easy trip to go to Har Eval and put this there. It's not easy or safe. It's a big schlep, if you look at the map. And it's right in the heart of the enemy territory. So why exactly did that have to be the location? So Vyaznayim Latara, he writes, that one point is that we want to show the people who live there that even though we plan on taking over the land, but we're not stam conquerors who are just randomly out for territory, that this is a tzivoy of Hashem, and therefore we come with His directive, with His command, and the Torah, the content of the Torah, is meant to represent that. He also suggests that that's because that's where Avram Avinu went. And so we want to show that this is the fulfillment of God's promise to Avram. The Gemara elsewhere, you know, the Gemara says that when the Jews left Egypt, so it was important that they should have all the gifts, they should have all the rechush, because we want to make it clear that the promise to Avram was fulfilled. So to here, we want kind of a public connection to Avram's promise, to God's promise to Avram, that there was a fulfillment. So therefore, Davka, where he was, we want there to be these rocks over there. And the third possibility suggests, along those lines of Avram being there, that that's also, we want the Jews to know that. We want the Jews to understand that they're being brought into the land of Israel. It's not stam, okay, here's a nice place to live, but that this is all the realization of the fact that Avram's initial covenant with God is what brings them there in the first place. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment, Apidarach HaDrash, in the appropriately named Darash Moshe. So Rav Moshe notes that you would think that Har Eval is where the Klolos are, that you'd think that we would want to go to the Bracha Mountain, not to the Klolo Mountain. So he has very much Apidarach HaDrash explanation. Says that Bracha means Riboy. Bracha we associate with having a lot and having excess. And klala we associate with deficiency, with lacking. So it says, when it comes to gashmias, so you want to have a sense that you're full, that you have everything. When it comes to ruchnias, when it comes to the Torah that we're talking about here, you want to have a sense that you're deficient. You want to feel like you always have to push for more, like you always have to do more. So therefore, we want that mentality to be associated with the Torah, the har of klala, not that there's a real klala here, but only klala in the sense of deficiency, in the sense of missing something. So you're pushed to want more, to strive for more. That's the idea of it being on that mountain specifically. In terms of wanting more in Gashmias, so we should just point out this next pasuk, v'zavachta shlamim v'yachalta sham v'samachta lefnei Hashem Elokecha, that you shall offer korbanos there and you should eat there and you should be happy. So that connects to the theme of Yontif coming up, Simchas Yontif through the korbanos. So the Gemara in Pesachim has a somewhat of a scary statement for us nowadays. The Gemara says that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, ain simcha ela b'basar. That in those days, you couldn't have a simcha except through basar. That's what the pasuk is saying. V'zavachta, v'samachta, you have a connection between the two. But now that the Beis HaMikdash is no longer around, we don't have korbanos. So now all we have is wine, because the pasuk says Tehillim, V'yayin yisamach levav enov, something like that. That wine will make a man's heart happy. So it's wine and not basar. So the Torah Tamima has a comment which I appreciate. It says, are we saying that there's no more role for basar nowadays? It says no, chas v'shalom. It doesn't mean that. It means that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so basar was connected to the korbanos, so that could do it right away. But nowadays we don't have the basar kadshim, we don't have the whole theme of mitzvah of the korbanos as part of the basar, so therefore we need other things like wine to make it more festive. But of course, we shouldn't think that basar is not a part of it. Basar certainly is a part of our Simchas Yontif even nowadays. It's a little bit of a question, Ari. I know you find this topic an interesting question of Rav Kook's vision for the future, and the question of whether the loss of lava, will there be korbanos of animals? It's quoted that Rav Kook thought that loss of lava, the vision will be say, in the end of Shmon Esrei, of Arvala Hashem Minchas, Yehuda Yerushalayim, that it's specifically Menachos that will be a part of the Zman Mashiach and that buster, and that will all be vegetarians. Debate the various makoros in that point. So here the Torah is connecting zvachim specifically, and Rashi tells us, Chazal tell us that it means zvachim to exclude menachos. It's not non-animal sacrifice, exclude ofos also. This is only real flesh derais, the real basa behema. So I have to figure out exactly what that means as far as its role in Beis HaMikdash overall. Hi.
As long as we're quoting a sign in the Torah, a couple of parshas ago, and it says that your borders will be expanded, and you'll desire meat, and meal. And he says, if this is talking about the time of Mashiach, well, if the animals aren't having meat, because they're the lion is lying with the lamb, how can humans be having meat? Obviously not.
Huh?
And he says, according to the opinion that it's...
We'll also be reading books and stuff, which they don't do.
Right. according to the opinion where it's not literal, like Rambam was like, literal, and it's talking about armies or whatever, even then, the Torah would not exclaim or rejoice in the fact that humans will desire meat at the time of Mashiach. It's not well defined, so it's interesting. It seems to be like having the same similar vision of Cook.
All right, we'll take a look. Good Marlaka. Okay, so now to look at the last pasuk. So the last pasuk here, the last two pasukim. So this also leaves us with a very important message. And it says, "Vayedaber Moshe v'Kohanim Halevim al Kol Yisrael le'mor Haske Sushma Yisrael Hayom Hazeh Niyeis Olam." L'Hashem Elokecha, v'shamata v'kol Hashem Elokecha v'yasisas mitzvosav yaschukov asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. So this really closes off the theme. It really is quite appropriate that we have the third and fourth aliyahs together, because they really kind of end off on the same themes. Really all the same idea, really a consistent unit here, Shlishi and Revi together. So what does this word haskes mean? So haskes apparently doesn't appear anywhere else. The Gemara, towards the beginning of Brachas, the second part of Brachas, says it has to do with the level of attention that's relevant to Kriya Shema, how much Kavanah you need, Haskes, Shema Yisrael. It's translated sometimes in English as take heed. But the Gemara has a number of drashas on it, and the Torah Tamima comments that because this word only comes up once, so therefore Chazal felt it really was something that had to be expounded upon and was ripe for drasha. So there are a number of comments. The Gemara at the end of Masechas Brachos and of Samach Gimel has a couple of different meanings, which are all very relevant to us here in Yeshiva, all very relevant to us in the Beis Medrash. That one of it is a haskes, a reference to kitos, to groups. It says the Gemara that the Torah is only niknes b'chabura, is only acquired when people are together and they're exchanging ideas. That's necessary in order to really acquire Torah. So the environment of chavrusas, the Beis Medrash, where everyone's around together, that's a crucial step as far as acquiring the Torah. The Gemara also has a drasha that connects it to another idea we have, finding Chazal, about the Ein Divrei Torah Miskayim and Elamisha Memis Atzmo'ala, that Torah only is going to flourish when somebody kills himself over it. So the Mefarshim explain, we mean kill yourself. V'chai behem, but only kill yourself. So it doesn't mean kill yourself in that sense, God forbid. It means that you consider yourself dead to the world, so to speak, that nothing else exists right now. So again, it's like Rabbi Penner spoke about in the Beis Medrash two weeks ago, that the Beis Medrash has to be a place sometimes where all the other distractions are taken away, but we're just focusing on the learning and the purpose of the Beis Medrash. So that idea is perhaps also in this pasuk. And the third drasha the Gemara has is that it means the way the learning has to be is that first you have to learn it the first time and then ponder it afterwards, then go into greater depth afterwards. So you could suggest that all three of those interpretations are all there for the importance of Seder every day. We say it's important to come to Seder, to come to the Beis Medrash. So they all of those are represented in these three drashas, that you have to have chabur around you, you have to have people around you in order to succeed in learning, that you have to have focus on the learning and not have everything else going on, and all the rest of the world calling to you. And first you learn, and then you ponder. So first you go through the marmakomos, and then you have shir afterwards. You have to have a couple of layers of your experience with learning. That's all there. So just note also, so again, the unit with the Shlishi and Revi is really one complete unit. It works very well together. So the last pasuk has the same idea that was emphasized in the last pasuk. Revi has the same idea that was emphasized in the first pasuk of Shlishi. That the pasuk ends, V'shemata v'kol shemol kecha v'asisas mitzvos v'yizchuka v'asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. So hayom, is it really today? So Rashi says, Chazal say, you know, hayom, you should feel every day like the Torah was just commanded to you that day. That should be the nature of the experience. So it's the same thing we started off with, the chol yom yu b'nechek chadashim. That's a theme that's repeated here. And we'll also just mention this whole aliyah altogether. So Rav Nevinsal has a sicha about this where he explains that, you saw this? He said that they said, you heard it? Okay. But, okay. All right. Sounds good too. That Rav Nevinsal suggests, he says there are a lot of parallels here to Matan Torah, to Har Sinai, that this aliyah, this Revi, basically parallels the original giving of the Torah, that you have writing, right? The Torah was written down, and now we're being told to write the Torah down. And the idea of the Korban, there's a number of things that was also, there was Mizbeach, there was all that was also taking place at the time of the giving of the Torah. So there are certain themes here that are meant to parallel the giving of the Torah. And in essence, so it's like there's a new Maimon Har Sinai, that Maimon Har Sinai happened the first time, and now God's instructing there should be essentially a second Maimon Har Sinai, something that's really meant to evoke a replaying of Har Sinai. So why should that be necessary? Why is that there? So he gives two reasons why. He says one is that you really have a whole new generation now. Now this was not the Dor that received the Torah, this is the next generation. And because of the Gezerah that they were died off, so you don't really have a transmission like you otherwise would have. So you really have a new generation which needs its own Matan Torah. But he also says that here, this is when they go into Eretz Yisrael. So we believe that Eretz Yisrael is machkin, that everything is on a different level. So we need to be given the Torah before, and we need to have a new Maimon Har Sinai, so to speak, when we enter into the land. And you might argue, he doesn't actually say it like this, I don't think, but you might also argue that in contrast to the first Matan Torah, this Matan Torah has to happen through the Jewish people. They have to do the work, so to speak. They have to do the writing and the setting up, as opposed to the first Torah, where the first experience of the Torah where it was given. So now the Jews do all the work, which is also very much consistent with the whole theme of going from the Midbar into Eretz Yisrael, that in the Midbar they lived a miraculous existence and God's providing everything. And going into Eretz Yisrael, as we know, is hard work. You have to now do everything yourself. And that's a major transition. So it's Ki'ilu, God said, okay, I gave you the Torah the first time, now it's your job to write it down and to create a new Maimon Har Sinai yourself. And as Rav Nevinsal goes on to suggest, he says that he says like this, that we have short memories, and the Torah is addressed to our short memory. So even having a second Maimon Har Sinai was not enough. We needed more. So then, this is Daf Yomi today. So he goes on to say that Hakel is also about that. Right? This is Chagiga Daf Gimel. That the whole idea of Hakel is also to continue this process of there being another giving of the Torah. This also works well for those who interpret that the Torah that was written on the rocks was the same Torah, the Parshas Melech, that the king reads at Hakel. Also, it's the Shemitah year coming up, so we'll have Hakel down the line. I guess you could consider that a little synergistic also. But the Daf Yomi is better, that connects a little bit more. But then he goes on to say also, a little bit timely, that Rosh Hashanah is the same idea also, that the blowing of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, the kolos, it's all a part of also recreating within ourselves on an individual level that we should experience the Kabbalah, Satorah, Mechadash, that we should have this sense of being presented with the Torah, and that we should see it as our own personal acceptance. So all of this really, again, these aliyahs really do create a certain unified theme, and it's very relevant to this time of year. It's very relevant to our experience of tshuva, our experience of paying attention to our commitments, of recognizing what is our responsibility, what is our role in this world on a national level, what's our role on an individual level, of recognizing how we have to recreate within ourselves a mentality of Maimon Har Sinai, a mentality of Kol Yom Yubeinecha Chadashim, that we should always see the Torah as new, as exciting, as fresh, as something that we are committed to with a reinvigorated spirit every day, especially this time of Elul and Rosh Hashanah. So there's a very consistent, powerful message that this middle section of Parshas Kisavo offers us, and I hope that over the course of Shabbos we'll be able to take that inspiration from the Kriyas HaTorah, and God willing, I will see you all Sunday with a new sense of reinvigoration and recommitment. And we will head towards Rosh Hashanah with that spirit in mind. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. It's the only good thing. And I'll see you then.